And now on to Genesis 16. And as was pointed out last week, as we're working our way through this book, I think this will be the end of the Bob series. Bob Shorten had the 14th chapter, and Bob Northey the 15th. I'll work on the 16th, and I don't think we were able to line up a Bob for the 17th. Nevertheless, I'll give you a bit of a take on this. And the other two Bobs got to tell you about the faith of Abraham. They got to tell you about the courage of Abraham. I get to tell you about some of the other parts of Abraham. But first, let's read the passage. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children, but she had an Egyptian slave named Hagar. So she said to Abram, "The Lord has kept me from having children. Go sleep with my slave. Perhaps we can build a family through her." Abraham agreed to what Sarai said. So after Abram had been living in Canaan 10 years, Sarai, his wife, took her Egyptian slave Hagar and gave her to her husband to be his wife. He slept with Hagar, and she conceived. When she knew she was pregnant, she began to despise her mistress. Then Sarai said to Abraham, "You're responsible for the wrong I'm suffering. I put my slave in your arms, and now she knows she's pregnant. She despises me. May the Lord judge between you and me." "Your slave is in your hands," Abram said. "Do with her whatever you think best." Then Sarai mistreated Hagar, so she fled from her. The angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in a desert. It was a spring that was beside the road to Shur. And he said, "Hagar, slave of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going?" "I'm running away from my mistress Sarai," she answered. Then the angel of the Lord told her, "Go back to your mistress and submit to her." The angel added, "I will increase your descendants so much that they will be too numerous to count." The angel of the Lord also said to her, "You are now pregnant and you will give birth to a son. You shall name him Ishmael, for the Lord has heard of your misery. He will be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone, and everyone's hand against him. And he will live in hostility toward all his brothers." She gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her, "You are the God who sees me." For she said, "I have now seen the one who sees me." That is why the well was called Beer-lah-ro. It is still there between Kadesh and Brid. So Hagar bore Abram a son, and Abram gave the name Ishmael to the son she had bore. Abram was 86 years old when Hagar bore Ishmael. Well, how are you at waiting? I'm not too good at waiting sometimes. In fact, this morning, I was wanting to get here in a hurry, so I didn't wait till the glow light in my diesel truck went out. And I guess it was just cold enough last night that then my truck didn't start. You know, a little while ago, we were down in Phoenix. And I was seeing my daughter off on a flight. And Brenda was just going to circle the airport to pick me up again. And I waited, saw my daughter off, waited, and I waited some more. And an hour later, while I was standing there kind of watching vehicles go by, I thought, how long will I wait here for when Brenda comes back? And we didn't have phones and that sort of thing, so I thought, I kind of planned in my head, I'll wait another hour. And then I'm going to leave my post and start trying to phone and see who else is out there. And how I might make connections with her. Just last night, I was trying to place a Kijiji ad. And I was waiting for it to appear on the site. You know, sometimes I go into a place of business and they'll ask me, when do you want that? Always strikes me as a strange question. Because generally I want it now. Or as soon to now as we could get it. When I'm thinking about what needs to be done, I want it now. I tell Bren, I'm a patient man. Because she doesn't know. What she doesn't realize is that I want things so much quicker than I get them that I'm very patient, or I wouldn't be this relaxed. Waiting for hours, waiting for days. Sometimes I need to wait for weeks. Or months, or even years. I'm not sure if I'm... It's getting caught in me, is it? That better? Okay. do you get tired of waiting? And do you get tired of waiting on God? Times when you think He's taking too long answering your prayers? Or does it just seem like the way He's doing things isn't the way He should? You could do them better or get results sooner. There was a movie that came out some years back called Bruce Almighty. Depicted someone who thought that if they had the powers of God that they could... manage things a whole lot better. And of course, he finds himself in a terrible mess and needing to rethink his approach. Would you like to just do life your way? You ever see those signs that sometimes you'll see on a business where it says under new management? I've always found those signs curious. I've never known really what they wanted me to gain or gather from that. Whether, you know, perhaps they thought I would be glad to see the old guys go, or whether they thought that, you know, come give us a try, or maybe the sign is to say, don't expect too much, we're new at this. But under new management, that's what we say. When we try to take our lives back from God, you see, He is to be our Lord, our manager, the one who gives, who we answer to, who directs us. That's what lordship is. It's He's in charge and I'm not. I like to take a retreat day every couple of months to be still long enough to remember He's in charge and I'm not. And that it'll be His plan by His timing in His way and it's not about me. Sometimes we have to consider if we're putting things under new management, who's leading? I notice this as I talk to people. Sometimes when they're trying to find a partner, they want to compromise what they believe God would have. Sometimes when they're trying to find a partner, sometimes it's when they're trying to lose one. I've noticed either way. Sometimes people will come in and say, I'm just wondering what God would think. And I sense it's not so much what would God think, but can you give me sort of a loophole for how I think I know what God would think, but I'd like to be an exception. Have you got an exception there you could pull out for me? Or when we're going to have a family, a very difficult thing to wait, and that's part of this story. Or when we're going to, or how we're going to make our fortune. That we make our plan and then ask God to bless it. Or our future. Some of us would like to just live life improvising, perhaps making compromise, taking detours, or at times just throwing up our hands and giving up because it's too hard. It's too hard to do it God's way. Or that maybe there's an opportunity that seems too good to miss. Just this once. Could we make the exception? Or do I need to miss out on... That looks like so much fun. I don't want to miss anything. I'd like to be able to have what seems to be the best of both worlds. Well, I'm just not content to stay the course. Excuse me. Well, we've already heard in the previous chapter that Abram receives an amazing promise from God. He's going to have a son, and he's going to be the father of a great nation. He tells Sarai, when she's about 80 years old, and that, you know, needed to stretch her imagination as to how life was going to be. And then they went about anticipating, expecting, trying to have that baby that was going to be the beginning of a nation. And 10 years pass. And I guess, you know, 10 years is pretty good waiting. But after these 10 years, and no pregnancy, Sarai comes up with her own plan, a new plan. What about Hagar, the Egyptian? Well, what we learn that Abram was a man of faith, a man of courage. We also, you see, and sometimes you can have the courage to go fight off kingdoms, but you may be more inclined to conflict avoidance at home. And that seems to be the case with our friend Abram. Because she brings the plan, and Abram takes the role of classic conflict avoider. You know, and I can imagine, you know, if he was sitting in my counseling room, he would have said, now, are you sure you're all right with this? Really? This is your plan? Well, if you think so, okay. He was willing to give it a try. Hagar becomes wife too. And she gets pregnant. But when she gets pregnant, she develops an attitude. She's got an attitude, and Hagar starts acting like she's like wife number one. And that upsets Sarai. And when it upsets Sarai, she goes to Abraham and says, "You're to blame for this. It was you that caused this. And one of the things is that as soon as blame shifting begins, there's a whole series of things that unfold. And I've seen it in my counseling office. I've never counseled Abram and Sarai, but I can imagine a bit of what it might have been like if I could have had. I would have liked this couple to come in a little sooner, though, for some counseling. And in that counseling session, with the blame shifting, I bet you we would have heard Abram say, well, it was your idea. And your problems with her aren't mine. It's not my problem that you women can't get along. Don't blame me. You take care of it. He's got a lot of other important man things to do. And so he says to her, do whatever you like. She's your servant. Makes no difference to me. I never really liked Hagar in the first place. It's just one of those things that happen. Just don't be mad at me. We need men who will be men and stand up for and speak up for what is right and bear responsibility and follow through when there are mistakes to do that which is God-honoring. Sarai takes out her anger, it appears, not on Abram, but on Hagar. And her anger, her jealousy, her insecurities, and she begins to mistreat, to abuse Hagar. Where is Abram? Doesn't he see or hear what's going on? Doesn't he care? Isn't this the woman that's is carrying his child? But he's committed to not getting involved. Can we identify? Can we identify with conflict avoidance? It's not my problem. I'd just rather not get involved. Whether that's at a personal level and a family level, whether that's public or national, or worldwide, it's messy. If we get involved where there's conflict, family conflict. Did you know that this area, Central Alberta, has the highest rate of family violence in the country? Yeah. Abuse. Would we rather just not know and not be involved? Or homelessness. Couldn't we just put those people away somewhere we didn't have to see them, out in our streets or near our places of business? Migrant workers that are treated like slave labor, not somewhere else, but in this country. Should we care about that? Should we care about the challenges those immigrating to our country and refugees are having, settling? Do we get involved and be concerned for the poor and the vulnerable? Not in my backyard. It's not my problem. We see in the news, idle no more. And we wonder, where did this come from? Well, perhaps you haven't kind of been following the trend over the last 100 years or so. We can't get behind, you know. You see, the problems of a displaced people who've been ignored and abused for decades. Some of them just give up. And some of them seek escapes. But there's some of them who get angry. And they want to get even. Has that got anything to do with what it is to be a God follower? Does your picture of what it is to be one who follows after Jesus call your attention to these atrocities around us? You see, well, let's pick up the story. Hagar flees. Actually, that's her name. Her name literally means to flee or to be a... when someone's running from the law. A fugitive. She flees as a fugitive. And she runs out into the wilderness. But the angel of the Lord meets her and asks her, where is she going? She doesn't have an answer for that. She doesn't know where she's going. She just knows that she's running from Sarai. She's running away. She doesn't know what she's running to. Can you identify with her? Are there times when you just want to run? You want to escape? You want to avoid? You may feel trapped and unprotected? What are you running from? You see, because that is to live life with fear. That we are running from that which frightens us. But the angel of the Lord asks a different question. He asks, where is she going? What is her direction? What is her destination? What is her purpose? What's your life going to add up to? Where is it going? Do you hear God calling you to run to Him? To find His purpose, His meaning, His direction, to seek His protective presence. In the exchange, Hagar learns that our God hears her suffering. He cares for her. She wasn't part of the promised of the promise. She wasn't part of the nation. But our God cares for the Hagars, the vulnerable, the slave girl, the runaway slave girl. Our God cares for. And if we are His followers, I'm thinking we have a place to care for the Hagars. And in fact, you see, although Abram had turned his back and ignored her sufferings, our God isn't like that. He hears the cries of those who are hurting. He cares for the powerless, the vulnerable, and the abused. That's why His word tells us that as His people, a people of faith, we care for widows and orphans in their distress. That's why the prophets focus on God's concern for how we treat the poor and the stranger in the land, the alien, the refugee. That's why in the law, the indication was that a third of the tithe was to be kept for those in need and distributed to those in need. Apparently, he thought it was important that God's people would have that concern. Jesus said that His gospel could be seen and measured in how we cared for the least of these, those in need of clothing and those in need of shelter, and those who weren't well, and those who were in prison. And he said, if you do it unto the least of these, you do it unto me. You see, he was concerned about those things. That's why when the church at the beginning and the Gentiles were coming into the early church, and they wondered, what do we need to pass on? What do we need to require of these Gentiles that they not have to be Jews and keep all of the Jewish law? What should we require of them? That one of the requirements was that they not forget the poor. Because that was so central to what it is in being a God follower, to being like him. You see, it's a practical kind of caring that makes a statement about, makes a statement to the community that this love we talk about is the real deal. A young man spoke to me about his questions and doubts about the church. And not really wanting too much to do with it. But I came to find that he was quite eager to volunteer his time at Loaves and Fishes. And I asked why. He said, they're the real deal. I asked, what does that mean? He said, they're doing something about it. They're caring for people that others don't care about. You see, that witnessed to him and spoke to him that there was an authenticity of the faith that shows up when we care for those who are vulnerable. When we hear like God hears, you see, God heard Hagar and her suffering. So much so that when he instructs her and tells her, you're going to have a child, and that child is going to need to be named Ishmael, which means God hears. God cares. Yes, in my backyard, he cares. Whether that backyard includes Baraka, and I'm so glad that the fellowship has wanted to be involved there. I'm so glad Fred's working with refugees. I'm so glad that we look for opportunities to make a difference to those who need it. That's why it blesses me to see the way you've got behind Shalom. There's an impact to be had in showing the world we care and care beyond our own. That impact, whether it's among our neighbors or with the First Nations or it's around the world, to be able to hear Bob Northey talk about what he sees as needing done with the people that he's been able to be involved with in Africa. Yeah. This is following the example of a God who hears. He hears her suffering and he responds that he cares. You see, the angel of the Lord told her to call him Ishmael. God hears, God cares. He protects with his presence. Doesn't make all the difficulties go away. Jesus said, the poor you will always have with you. It wasn't that we were going to solve all the problems. It was that, you see, she went back, Hagar did, Not because Sarah had a change of heart and was going to be a lot more easy to get along with. There's no indication of that. What she went back with was the assurance that she wasn't alone. That God cares. He hears, and he would be with her. And so she had the courage to go back. And she heard that he also had a plan for her life. And that her life was going to impact nations. It was going to make a difference. She went back with the promise that God had a plan for her. It wasn't going to be easy, but she wasn't going to be alone. That child, Ishmael, became the father of the Ishmaelites. His 12 sons. Remember that on the other side of the lineage, that Abraham and Sarah would have a son, Isaac, who had, and we hear that we're going to get to 12 tribes. Well, there were tribes on Ishmael's side too. The heads of the many of the Bedouin tribes that have inhabited what we would now in modern day call Northern Arabia, Iraq, and Iran are the areas they populated. You see, God had promised Abram that he would be the father of a great nation. And he's a God that keeps his promises. But the plan that Abram and Sarah put in place also meant he fathered other nations of the world, much of the what we now know as the Arab world. He also fathered. It might not surprise us then if it was all Daddy Abram's land that they might all think they have a very legitimate claim to it. We're told that Ishmael and his line would live in hostility toward all their brothers. That would include the descendants of his half-brother Isaac. You may have heard of one of Ishmael's famous descendants. He was a prophet named Muhammad. You might have heard of some of that hostility in the news. So the next time you get tired of waiting on God to keep his promises, or you start thinking your way might be better than God's way, you might do well to remember what happened when Abram and Sarah decided to do things their way rather than God's way. Perhaps we can be more like our Lord to hear and to respond to the needs of those around us. We're never more like Jesus than when we show we care. And if the Lord should ask you, where are you going? My hope would be that you're not running away from life, but that you're running to him and making yourself available for his service. Our God hears. Will we? Be sure to listen for his voice. We need his direction. And we need to learn his compassion. You see, we don't just learn from the strengths of those who are the heroes of the faith. We also learn from their weakness. We're given the opportunity to follow the example not of Abraham, but the example of our God, as we've seen and come to know him in Jesus. So leaders, whatever leaders, will have their strengths, And they will also have their weaknesses. And there will be things that we should follow their example of as very good. But the only one that we can follow whose example is perfect is Jesus. And the rest we will learn from both where they are strong in following after the Lord and where they're not so strong. So my hope is that you'll hear his voice and you'll follow the example of the God who hears and cares, and that we will commit to his way even when it's hard to wait or it's hard to handle, that we will endure as people committed to making him Lord. May God bless you.